My name is Jackie Lamport. Today is Monday, August 23rd. Welcome to the Capital Daily Podcast. Today on the show.
Let's talk with our population. Do you guys want to do this or do we not? And if we do, we need to gear up the EV, all these other things really quickly, and we need to peel back on the gas infrastructure.
As the impacts of climate change continue to become more prevalent and worrisome, climate policy is beginning to show signs of bold action. One such bold policy is happening right here on Vancouver Island. And for today's Municipal Monday, we learn all about it. Today's Capital Daily Podcast is brought to you by the Fairmont Empress. Enjoy the most competitive wages, benefits, incredible perks, and a $1,000 signing bonus when you join the Fairmont Empress family. Learn more at tinyurl.com/empressjobs. Daniel Arbour is the director of the Comox Valley Regional District. His new climate policy proposal is, more than anything, controversial. He is proposing a change to the zoning laws in Comox Valley that would make it illegal to build any new petroleum stations or add additions to any existing ones. Instead, the zoning would allow for electric vehicle charging stations and hydrogen fuel stations. Daniel joins us today to talk about how it would work, what his inspirations were, and why he is willing to take such a firm stance on climate policy, despite how controversial it may be. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Hey, nice to see you and talk to you.
Let's start with just a basic overview of what exactly your idea is.
Basically, a couple of weeks ago, I put forward a resolution at our local government in the Comox Valley that really aims to stop the growth of gas stations and also to provide a path for their phase out, and to allow new uses and encourage hydrogen and electric energy as a replacement. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and how would that work?
In my case, at my local government, I propose a change in the definition of what an automotive service station is. So when people own property or have property, they have all the permissible uses that they can do on their land. So, you know, you can build a house or two houses or whatnot. So with automotive service station, what I'm proposing is that we remove the right to sell petroleum fuels at automotive service stations.
Okay. But as I understand, this doesn't mean that gas stations would disappear overnight if this were to be passed. There would be a period where some would be allowed to exist technically illegally, right?
All of them. They would become what's called legally non-conforming.
Okay.
So if they ever cease the use, then that use could not return. So it's basically grandfathered for now, but it couldn't pass on forever.
Okay, and then they also wouldn't be allowed to add any new pumps, correct?
Yeah, and then there's also a question that has arisen around the tank replacements. Most of them have to do tank replacements every 20 years or so. So that's a question mark right now, whether that would trigger not being able to do it. So there's still a few things we definitely need to confirm or discuss with both industry stakeholders and the rest of it.
Okay. And what was your inspiration for this?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, that might surprise yourself and others, but the idea popped in my mind a couple years ago. At a local government, we were debating whether to declare a climate emergency. And at the time, I took concern with climate emergency, and I advocated for climate crisis. And I said an emergency is usually short term and requires drastic action now. I said to me that climate is more crisis. It's long term and requires complex. But then I said to my colleagues, because some of them were pushing really hard for a climate emergency, and I said, okay, well, if we do climate emergency, we should pull the business license for gas stations tomorrow. Right? And after I made that argument, they agreed to call it a climate crisis. But 2 years later, that idea stayed with me. And I'm like, you know, there has to be a way that we are more proactive about suppressing what we don't want, because it's so expensive to build what we want. at local government, we keep pouring money into all these active transportation, trails, transit, all these different initiatives, and we haven't really moved most of the population to those modes. Mm-hmm. Everybody's still in a gas car. The second thing I would say that triggered me is the federal government and the province just passed a mandate that in 14 years, all cars have to be zero emission, all cars sold. And I'm like, oh, that sounds like another great promise that we're going to break. So why don't we start organizing and saying, hey, if we only have 14 years, I think that suppressing gas station is probably going to help us.
Comox Valley isn't exactly super walkable, and it's not as transit friendly as, say, a place like Victoria. And there are a lot of people who do rely on their cars. Do you think it's realistic right now with the with how transit and the walkability of the city currently are?
Well, my proposal would help move the shift for cars to hydrogen and electric energy, which is already going to happen. Mm-hmm. So it's not huge on mode shift. And it's also very slow. A lot of people, as you said, I'm glad you said it at the start, it's not pulling gas stations tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It just provides a pathway and prevents the building of new ones for sure. And then provides a pathway for them to phase out over time and allow the new uses to come in. So, and you're right, I'm in a very small rural areas. In fact, I represent the rural areas around the Comox Valley along with the two colleagues. And one of my colleagues was suggesting we should relax the bylaws and put a gas station on Mount Washington so people can from Victoria have more convenience. And I'm like, wow, we really don't see the issue from the same perspective at all. Yeah, you're right. So it's a small jurisdiction. What's happening right now is I'm getting calls from other elected officials and in local government, and they're looking at it. There is a jurisdiction apparently this summer, I wasn't aware of that, but in Sonoma County in California that actually put in a ban for gas station. So it's about getting that conversation going, and for different local government is going to look different. Mm-hmm. But my main message is let's stop being scared to look at petroleum fuel in our cars. The climate expert in the province said the reason why what you're doing hasn't been done is it usually leads to the politician not being reelected because mm-hmm. you're attacking gas culture. And indeed, the backlash that I've received the last week or two has been impressive. I mean, it's been 90% negative response to the proposal and people just saying, leave my car alone, basically.
Yeah, I can imagine, just given any time there's conversations, even in Victoria, about adding bike lanes, and that's a city where a lot of people bike, you still get that argument, oh, the quote, a war on cars.
Totally. And so politicians are very reluctant to take it head on, but I'm like, you know what? That's a giant in the room. Mm-hmm. You know, if... It's literally the main source of our emissions. And we haven't tackled trying to suppress that infrastructure. We're great as local government officials to say, oh, don't build a pipeline. Don't, you know, all these things. But okay, let's talk with our population. Do you guys want to do this? Do we want to transition or do we not? Mm-hmm. And if we do, we need to gear up the EV, all these other things really quickly. And we need to peel back on the gas infrastructure.
I know that this is federal, as you said, 14 years to get all of the cars sold to zero emission is quite
new
ambitious.
Cars, yeah.
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 New cars, yes. Do you think it's realistic for the people to be able to afford those types of vehicles right now? I mean, and obviously the market could change immensely, but right now, if you were to say to Comox Valley, hey, everybody, let's all start doing our part, let's shift to EV. Is that even realistically possible?
Not right now on a price basis, but you have to realize that we're competing with a very well-established industry around gas cars. That industry is changing. They're mm-hmm. they're moving quickly, and I believe that the industry is going to meet those targets. Everybody is terrified of Tesla, all that stuff. They're seeing all these mandates, so the industry will change. Can people make the shift right away? No. Is it going to be comparable in cost over time? Absolutely. Because right now, the cost at point of purchase is definitely a little bit higher, depending on the types of models you're looking at. But the maintenance of the vehicle over the lifetime is far less mm-hmm. than a gas car. So for those who can afford it, it's great. That's why the rich are buying it, because they have the capital to invest now, and they know they're saving over time. The poor people can't.
Sorry, you said for a gas car, so you mean for an electric car, the maintenance is less?
For an electric car, yeah, thank okay. you. The maintenance is less. It's like it doesn't cost much to run, and it's got way fewer parts. So it's got a lot of natural advantages. But it's just right now, because it doesn't have the scale, of infrastructure and the production and all the rest of it is still expensive. I've cataloged about 14, 18 counter arguments to my proposal so far, and you've already hit on two or three of them. And the thing is people who are in this industry who understand the trend. People who know that Norway is already at 83% of cars sold are electric, so it is possible to rapidly change a society if you have the desire and if you start implementing policies towards it.
Like you said, oil and gas is a very large industry and a very powerful industry in the country. Do you predict there being a backlash if this were to go through?
What I suspect is happening, I've heard from everybody so far, except the petroleum industry. So if I was a petroleum lobbyist, the way I would look at that is, let the public crush this idea. The public is not ready for this. We don't even need to engage in this debate. If you're a gas station or whatnot, you're just like, okay, whatever, this will blow over. But I think over time, as we saw with other things, whether it was the cigarette industry, in the Valley, we've had this huge debate around wood stoves. Eventually, they have to show up if they start feeling that their business model is threatened a little bit. We're not there yet. It would take my resolution to pass, which is not a given. It would take other local governments to suggest similar initiatives. And at that time, I believe we'll start to hear from the petroleum industry. Right now, I think their best play is to stay quiet.
Have you spoken to any other municipalities on the island or in the province since this has come out?
Yeah, that was my week. I've had so many cool conversations, both with elected officials, with people in government, with elected people at the province. And so those have been cool because people are asking the right questions, because my proposal may not be the ultimate solution here or elsewhere, but the questions we're raising around how are we going to facilitate that massive transition in 15 years? And that's what kind of policies can we do at local government? What do we need to push the province and federal government on? Or are we going to bear the cost of it all? Like, if the private sector is not putting EV charging station in hydrogen, does that mean the province and local government has to pay for it all? There's a lot of great questions I'm having with local government officials. And I think, if anything, it's really started the conversation in a good way.
Would you mind naming any specific municipalities that might be interested?
I would love to, and my better self says not to.
Okay.
Because what happens is, with the folks I'm talking, some of them are considering it in their local government. But at local government, we're heading into an election year for ourselves. So there's a lot of other things at play if people want to look at putting something like that forward. But I'm actually quite hopeful that a couple of colleagues I've talked to might move. And then second, I challenge, I don't know if how widely your program is listened to in Victoria, but I challenge local government officials to give me a call, talk about what that can look like, some of the risks, what I've learned so far. Mm-hmm. I think Victoria would be the greater Victoria would be a natural place for these types of ideas to be tabled for sure for discussion.
And we'll take a quick break for a word from our sponsor. Today's Capital Daily podcast is brought to you by the Fairmont Empress. Enjoy the most competitive wages, benefits, incredible perks, and a $1,000 signing bonus when you join the Fairmont Empress family. Find all the existing career opportunities and further information at tinyurl.com/empressjobs. You said that you first had this idea 2 years ago and it was an obvious, well, that's not going to happen. Now we're seeing, I mean, very intense climate disasters right now. And we've seen this report that says, okay, this is it. We're here.
Yeah.
Do you think that this will be easier to push than it would have been even a year ago?
I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't have done it a year ago. I wouldn't have done it before COVID. Because the other thing that I saw with COVID is a societal response to an emerging issue and a transformation of how we live in such a rapid time. And we treated that health crisis as a true emergency and brought in policies that were, I mean, some of them very scary, to be honest, in terms of democratic rights and freedom, but also effective in terms of getting ourselves so we don't all die. And if you think about climate, and you're right, I tabled my resolution before the IPCC report came out. and like 3 days before. And when it came out, I'm like, oh, thank you. Here's a, you know.
But you're the only person who said that when that came out.
I was thinking, you know, yeah, I was thinking to myself, where else is this going to happen? And I've got my two kids here and, you know, very climate conscious. They're 10 and 12 years old. And I'm like, we're on the west coast of BC. This is where people have the most care for the environment, the most concern about climate change. This type of proposal is likely not to emerge in Alberta, you know. So, so I was like, you might as well put yourself out there. What are you in politics for? People are demanding more radical solutions to the climate crisis, even if they may not be imperfect solution. I'm throwing something that I'm fully confident is in the ballpark of the kind of things that we should be looking at.
Do you see any other challenges with the idea?
Losing the next election is a possibility. I actually don't feel that strongly on that because a lot of my constituents know that I'm actually on all the issues I deal with. I'm a very careful manager. I'm a centrist politician on a range of things, and I had warned them that on climate issues, I really feel that's an existential threat, as most people do, to society as a whole. So I'm probably joking about that, but I'm joking about that partly because I've probably gotten 1,000 social media comments, most of them negative, and people literally saying, we're going to organize to try to get you out of office. So that does make you a little nervous, but at the same time, I'm really proud. My son said, Dad, I'm so proud of you. Even if you have to find another job after, it's the right thing to do. And then in the elected official world, people are like, wow, okay, you know, that's bold. Mm-hmm. What do we do next, right? What?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think it's worthwhile. So far, I think the conversation itself is worth it. Mm-hmm. Whether this passes or not, I think we've started a conversation. It's hard to return from it.
Yeah. Well, like you said, we're at a point where we have to do something and we have to be bold, and somebody's got to be bold. So that's great that you are.
yeah, trying. And then I'll say another thing too is, one of the climate expert in BC who's really influenced provincial policy for a long time, I've had an exchange with him both through the CBC article, but then we ended up having a little bit of back and forth. And it was really humbling because he said, your policy doesn't go far enough for greenhouse gas impact. He said, I would be more impressed if you were suggesting a date that gas stations close. And then he said, but then for sure you would lose a election. So he was saying, you know, it's very logical what you're proposing, but it's also leaves it open-ended how long existing gas stations can stay open. So he was challenging me, criticizing the proposal. And that was good too, because like, wow, okay, so I'm getting all this backlash. At the same time, we got this other guy saying, you know, it's a logical step, but it's like, it's not going to move as much as we need to move. And I'm like, wow, okay, you go and tell that to people because, you know, so that's why he said usually most of climate policies are a little more obscure to the public. You know, we might look at things, building code or again, like the big move, I guess, was to pass the mandate that all cars sold will be net zero. That was a provincial move and a federal move. But the problem that I have with that is sometimes with those big mandates, all you need is a change of government to scratch it. Mm-hmm. We saw it in the Harper years, those mandates, the federal one is not written into law. So you can see just with the snap of a government, you know, entire Ministry of Environment departments being discarded. So for me, there's still value as the more we layer our climate action across all levels of society, the more the chances that will be effective. Mm-hmm. That was my counter argument to his, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any more bold climate policies that you want to implement?
Not for this. This one is consuming, definitely is going to consume me for the next few months. There's a tons of stuff that I'm working on. I'm on the board of the Allan Corridor Foundation, so the ENN Railway. I'm working something I started a few months ago. So a lot of what I'm working is all the other politicians are working on, which is how to build transit, how to build the new infrastructure of the future. I proposed linking with BC Transit all the way from Campbell River to Victoria. So we have a proposal. We'll have discussions with the Nanaimo District. So there's a lot of smaller initiatives that make a difference. The one that I'm not tackling, and I told my 10-year-old son that that's for him and when he's in office later, is agriculture and veganism and all those issues around agriculture emissions. He's vegan himself, and he's almost convinced our family to do it because we don't want to cook two meals, right? And he's got all the right arguments. I mean, but I said, yeah, no, I'm leaving that one for you. But there's just, you know, you have to look at those big wins, I think, for climate. You have to look at those big places where you can have an impact. Fossil fuel is the biggest one. Agriculture is probably next. Buildings is the other one. Our lifestyle, consumerism. I mean, I don't need to talk to you about that. We all know it.
Yeah.
But for now, I'm happy to support initiatives in all those sectors. But this one, I think I have my hands full on the climate front with this proposal.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Daniel, I wish you luck. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. You have a great day.
And again, that was Daniel Arbor, the director of the Comox Valley Regional District. If you want to help support Capital Daily's local journalism and connect your business with our engaged and curious Greater Victoria audience of over 50,000, email our partnerships team at advertising@capitaldaily.ca. Thanks so much for joining us today. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave a rating and a review, and also subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes going forward. We post new shows every Monday to Friday. My name is Jackie Lamport. This is the Capital Daily Podcast. We'll talk to you tomorrow.